The Round Golf Podcast with Richard Kaufman.
Hello again, will they keep on coming? The Round Golf Podcast with Navigate Contracting and Red Ray. Now, of course, if you're listening, you love sport. I love sport. I'm sure you love it too. And one of the best things about it, in a way, is that it's not scripted, is it? We don't know how events are going to unfold, really, for the sportsmen and women. It's the same thing. They've got a chance, whether they're playing a golf tournament, a chance that week to achieve something, maybe achieve something that either they've never done before, that someone else hasn't managed before. Now, that's what happened, of course, at one event for this week's guest, Ollie Fisher. Now, Ollie was a child prodigy. In case you don't know, he was the youngest golfer to play in a Walker Cup. He reached number one in the world amateur rankings at just the age of 17. So he was very good, very young. Now, in this interview, we talk about the pressure, the expectations that being that good so young brought, the comparisons to one of his peers, one of his good friends, Rory McIlroy. But it's the round at last year's Portugal Masters that's our natural starting point. Of course, this is called the Round Golf Podcast. Well, no round has gone lower, has it, on the European Tour than the one that Ollie shot on the Algarve. The Friday in Portugal, actually, I was commentating. I don't know if you know, I was commentating for Sky.
Yeah.
So when you normally turn up for a Friday at a European Tour event, it's kind of, I always say it's the most boring day normally on the European Tour. Thursday, it's all fresh, it's all starting. Saturday, people are moving up the leaderboard.
Yep.
Sunday, someone's going to win.
Yep.
Friday, it's kind of
cut day,
yeah. But it's probably
everyone's a bit more sort of intense, maybe, but not much going on. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. What's it like as a player though?
I think, I mean, for us or me especially, as I try not to see too much difference in the days. You know, in terms of the course setup and conditions. I think a Friday can be a little bit harder at times. They can always give yourself a few trickier pins coming in. So, you know, sometimes 17 and 18 can be quite risk-reward at times with the pins, with how they set them up generally. But, you know, you've always got that sort of feeling as a professional. Am I making money this week or am I not? Am I making the cut or not, really? And, you know, I know we don't think about that too much, but, you know, definitely coming down the last few holes, if you're on the cut line, you always know about it if you're level par or one under or two under or around the cut mark. You know where you're at. So it's a Friday. It's a bit of a mixed emotion day. It's either really good or sometimes you're on the edge of it and you feel under pressure, or you know you're all sort of having not a great first round. And you're looking forward to next week already and thinking, what can I get out of this? Sometimes, so it can be a bit of a mixed day, but generally one where you know you go out, warm up the same as you do normally and get out and try and shoot the best score you can.
So that Friday in Portugal, you know it's normally a low cut mark at the Portugal Masters.
Yep.
On that golf course. You're level par after day one, so really I suppose the mindset is try and shoot a number where I can make the cut.
Yeah, definitely. So I missed the two cuts before it. I can't remember where I was in. I think it might be in Holland and I'm not sure the other one, but I was just straight off the back of missing two and I'm around the top 60 in my own list, so I felt like I needed to, you know, kind of hold my own or have a good week somewhere along the line just to sort of solidify getting into Turkey and Nedbank and that. So, you know, it was a big cut to make. And I've had some decent form in Portugal before. I felt like I've had some good rounds there and, you know, had some good times and good experiences. Sat at level par after Thursday, going out Friday, having, you know, not had the best prep. I felt a bit rough about my game on Tuesday and Wednesday and sort of sat there on Wednesday afternoon, and I remember Thursday night actually quite vividly. I come off the course late. I think I played late on Thursday, was off on Friday morning, and I stayed on site there. And there's some apartments right next to the between the 8th and the 9th hole, and there's a little bar in the middle where you know we can get some pizzas and a few little sort of bits of picky food. And I'm sat down with my dad and my wife Paige, and I remember one of my coaches sent a video of me swing, and compared, it was just like a screenshot and sort of like a side by side of like Adam Scott. And I was looking at a few things Adam Scott was doing and sort of comparing it to me. And right at that moment, David Howell and Richard Blander walked past, and Howell went, "Oh, Ollie, like, why are you looking at Adam Scott?" He says, "That's really going to make you feel bad. You know, comparing yourself next to him is like Cool, mate. If you feel bad now, you're only going to feel worse after looking at that. So it was quite funny seeing Howler, obviously, on Friday night.
Adam Scott's got nothing of mixed.
No, well, no, obviously on the Friday night, after I shot whatever on Friday, Howler went, mate, I need to look at Adam Scott and compare myself. Like, that's obviously what's going on. So it was quite funny, really.
But I mean, just to go to that point, the Adam Scott thing, I mean, is there because there's similarities in your swings or is it to look at someone who's got...
I think sometimes like set up and some checking points and sometimes you might be feeling something and someone might be doing, you might look at something and they do something really well or, you know, there's different parts of people's swings that you like, whether it be rhythm, whether it be takeaway or transition or keeping a height, certain things that players do that look great. And Adam's obviously always swung the club, you know, really well and been great tee to green for a lot of years, really. So, you know, obviously someone, compared to him, I've looked at his swing to try and look at good bits, you know. I don't swing anything like him. I wish I did swing like him, but, you know, it's good to look at.
Sure. So you go out on the Friday, mission, make the cut.
Yep.
I mean, pretty quickly it was looking good.
Yeah, so I started, I think the pin was back left on the first, I hold a nice 15, hit a good, great drive off one, which is always important in Portugal. You know, I wouldn't say it's not a really hard drive, but it's one that, you know, you kind of, it's a little fade really, which kind of suits me a little bit, and as long as you don't squeeze it right, you tend to get quite a long way down there. Hit a little 9-iron in lovely, and then hold a nice putt, which was great. Birdied two, and then hold a great putt on three for birdie. So I started birdie, birdie, birdie. And, you know, fours are probably one of the best chances. Second best chance maybe in the first four holes. Didn't birdie four. Played the hole okay. I thought maybe missed a fairway right. I hit an average enough pitch. Two putt for par. So I'm 3-under through four. And like that's a great start. And, you know, I'm thinking, you know what? A couple more birdies and I'll make this cut comfortably, really. You know, because that's in the back of my mind still. Because, you know, obviously the last two missed cuts and, you know, wanting to finish the season a bit better. Hit an okay drive down five, which, you know, I said earlier I wasn't feeling quite as good as what maybe I'd like to have done about my game leading into it. But hit the fairway, hit a five wood, I think, in the front bunker. The pin was at the front, and suddenly hold me bunker shot for an eagle. And that's me 5-under through five. Hit a great shot into six, which is a strong enough par three there at the Victoria course. I think I hit a 4-iron slightly into the wind, so it was playing, it's still a decent hit, you know, 220 yard sort of hole. Back pin, quite firm on the green, ran all the way to the back. Then I hit a lovely putt. You know, my putting felt great that day, really. My pace was good. Well, for the first sort of 10 holes, it felt great, my pace, 11 holes. But hold a 30 footer for birdie, and then I'm 6-under through six, and suddenly, you know, I'm thinking, well, there's, you know, seven's a tough hole at Victoria. It's got, you know, water off the left, water on the left on the tee. But it's playing a little bit downwind, so it's probably the easiest wind we're going to get it. You know, not much breeze, but you know, the water, as long as you strike it, it can carry it. And that's kind of the only trouble. You know, when you're playing that nine holes and the wind comes back into in the afternoon, and you're maybe on a Friday, like you said, is, you know, probably the day which doesn't bring much about in terms of guys making the cut or whatever. But you know, when you're playing 7, 8, and 9 at that course with the wind into, you know, that's a tough hole. You're hitting the driver out to the right, then you're going in with 3-iron or 4-iron. It turned into a tough par four, so I was lucky to get that downwind, hit driver 9 into 10 foot, putt lipped out. I played the hole lovely, so that was me. After the 7th, I felt, you know what, my job today suddenly is a bit easier. There's a few chances on the back 9. I'll be here for the weekend, like, you know, I'll feel pretty relaxed. Hit a nice shot into 8, made the putt for birdie, 7-under through 8, and then hit a great drive down 9. I think I had a gap wedge in there, hit a lovely shot into 10 foot, and the putt just stopped right on the lip, like I hit. So I played 7 and 9, which were probably the two toughest holes at the end of the front nine. Played them great. You know, I was out in 7-under and almost felt like I could have been a couple more, but obviously got to a great start, so, you know, I take that every time.
So you're out in 28.
Yeah, -7 for the front nine, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's a low number. Are you now, because you said you've already sort of relaxed about making the cut.
Yeah.
Is anything creeping into the mind about...
I felt... What I felt like was... I didn't think anything about really 59 then. I felt like, you know what, I've got a chance to shoot a low score here. I was out on the opposite side to the TV group, so... Honestly, like, my dad was there. My wife joined me on the 8th hole. I think she came out onto the 8th green to see me putt. And that really was it. You know, Guy was caddying for me, his wife was out, Kate, and that was all that was there. So we, it almost felt like just going out for a round with you know, we was all relaxed. The guys I was playing with were relaxed and smiling, and, you know, there wasn't really much, didn't feel like there was much going on, really. It was quite a nice sort of atmosphere.
Yeah, this is the point at which I'm obviously commentating that day for Sky Sports. We sort of turn up, we're looking at the leaderboard, and we can see you've shot a low number. Our interest kind of peaks as I think we're coming on air just as you've birdied 10, 11, and 12. Mm. So immediately it crosses our mind when you birdie those three that 59's up. When was the first time you remember it crossing
your mind? I birdied, hit a nice shot down 10, left myself a little pitch to the front, and I come up a little short. I had like a 10-footer up the hill, straight in the middle, lovely part. And then 11's an easy hole, you know, you hit a 3 or 4 iron, which is, you know, just a positional shot off the tee, and then just the pin was on the right hand side, so I controlled a little 9 iron, I think, pin high, 15 foot, rolled it dead centre, lovely pace, like read it perfectly, I can remember now. And then 12, so I went birdie, birdie, 10 and 11. 12 probably was the biggest challenge, you know, again, water on the left, not quite feeling as good as what maybe I can do with my driver. And it was one of them which you want to stand there and give it a rip and think, right, let's get this down there and knock it on the green, and right now we've got a chance of 59. But this was a really big hole in terms of the score, because if I hit in the water, suddenly it's like, you know, a whole momentum stopped and everything sort of goes away. And, you know, but I fanned this driver a little bit to the right hand side, and the rough was a little bit patchy that week, so I managed to get a really nice lie over on the right hand side, and the wind was a little off the right, so it just set up perfect for a 5-wood with a little draw. And I really tried to just draw it in there, and I hit the shot perfect just off the TV tower, pitched on the front half of the green and finished about 25 foot past the pin. So that was probably, as soon as that shot hit the green, I felt that I was caught, sort of odds on to shoot 59 with 15 coming up, short par 4, 17 as well, you know, the wind's going a little bit down.
So as much as 6 holes out, you're thinking
I knew that 12, after if I birdied 12, which, you know, I still had 25 foot or something for eagle, straight downhill, and that pin is quite quick around that hole. So I was just trying to get it to the front, just trying to get it to the front of the hole, and if it went past, it was only just going to trickle past. Left it like 3.5 foot short, and then obviously got a tricky putt, and, you know, managed to knock it in. And as soon as that went in, I was like, right, now I can just kind of like just be me around these holes, because I know I can make a couple of birdies. The course will give me the chance on 15 and 17. Still got 13, 14, which are chances. 18, if you get a drive away, it's still a possible chance. So, you know, I felt like I was, it was all in my hands. You know, I felt like I didn't have...
Had you been in any position like this before? You must have shot some low numbers.
I've never shot that low. I think I've shot 61, maybe at 61 or 2 in South Africa, which was a 9 under par round, I think.
But you were 10 under here after 12 holes.
10 under after 12.
So would you have been like that anywhere else?
So what was really, you know, interesting about this course was in 2016, I remember playing with Brett Rumford and Graham Storm in the last round, and I had to shoot a decent score to keep my card, really. You know, I was maybe 115 in the list or 111 in the list or wherever it was, and it was top 110. Stormy was around the same position, and Rummy was like 120, and we're all going out in sort of 25th place, needing a decent round to, you know, if we shot a good score, we'd be safe. And that was all of our mindsets. And I remember going out on the front nine, and we all had decent front nines. I think I was out in 3 or 4 under, Stormy was out in 2 or 2 under, Rummy just absolutely chipped his socks off. Like, I've never seen a guy, I mean, I know the rules have just changed now and you can leave the pin in, but he took the pin out from every time he was 30 yards off the green, the pin was out, and he rimmed out. Like, I've never seen a chipping display like it. And it's not easy around there, a little bit of Bermuda. You know, it was amazing what he did on that front nine. But that day and the night before this, that round, I imagined standing on the 12th tee at 5 under par, and the cameras would be out. And surprisingly, I'm standing on the 12th tee a couple of years later, 9 under par through 11, and Gary Murphy's on the right-hand side, you know, the on-course commentator. Murph's come out, you're obviously commentating, and the camera's around because I'm going so well. So I felt like I'd been in that position before, albeit I felt like the pressure wasn't really on me this time. I felt like the pressure was on me big time in 2016 because a mistake where I was going back to Q school. So it was nice. And the probably the thing that I'm most proud of I think it shows a little bit of maturity, but the thing I was most proud of was I actually had a, on 16, I had a poor shot into the green, come up short right, decided to putt it. You know, I think it was the right choice. Come up a little short, 15, 16 foot, and made it for par, which is huge in terms of that round. Which, yeah, we all go through that time in a round where we make a putt, even on the good rounds, or you know, very rarely do we go around and don't have to make a par putt. I said to my caddy walking off 16, I said, Guy, look, we don't get a chance. We're probably never going to get a chance to shoot 59 again. You know, I know Jim Furyk shot two 59s and a 58, but, you know, touch wood, maybe I do get a chance. You never know. But I said to him, look, we probably won't get this chance again. Like, let's just enjoy it for the next 2 holes. Even if we shoot 60 or 61, 62, you know, it's been a great day. And, you know, I think that just sort of, because the crowd was building.
So how many people were there now?
There was a small following around the back nine, as, you know, Murph come out from Sky and, you know, the on-course commentator, and I could feel the sort of, not pressure building, but the sort of excitement building. And then on the 16th green, when I hold that par putt, you know, it was obviously a real big putt for the momentum of the round. And then going down 17, you know, is obviously the entrance to the course where the public come in. And, you know, I'm finishing my round at maybe 12 o'clock or 12:30. And it was around the 18th tee and 17th green. That was the biggest crowd that was watching us all day, which is quite a lot considering I was on the other side of the draw to the TV groups, you know. So and there was definitely quite a bit of excitement and, you know, a fair few people around.
Were you nervous at all?
Yeah, I was nervous. You know, anxious, nervous, you know, whatever you want to call it.
Well, no one would be surprised. I remember I was at, I can't remember which club it was now, but it was the Irish Open or the European Open in Ireland. And I went out on the course commentating. Darren Clark needed a birdie at the last 2 holes to shoot 59. Of course, it's the magic number. No one had done it on the European Tour. And and the buzz there. And you know, Darren was feeding the nerves. And, you know.
Yeah, no, I felt...
Was it almost like trying to win a golf tournament?
I guess from the fact that you feel like you're trying to get over the line, it felt like that. But, you know, I was really nervous. I was nervous standing on, you know, that putt on 12 was edgy for me. You know, when I hold the putt on 12 from 4 foot, you know, I felt really nervous on that putt. And then, you know, playing 13 and 14, I think I hold a nice little short putt back on 13 from 2.5, 3 foot. 14, I held like a 5 or 6 foot. I had a, you know, my shot out of the rough come out a little bit softer than what I felt like. So I had some little tests.
But when you're on the 17th tee, I mean, it's not like being on the 71st hole with a two-shot lead.
No, but in essence, it's the same thing. And I think the thing that I try to do under pressure and, you know, all the time is, you know, what is the exam paper or what is the question I'm being asked here? What is the whole asking of me? Is it a fade? Is it a draw? What do I want to do? What do I feel comfortable with? Where do I want to hit it? Second shot, what do I want? Where's the pin? Where am I going to be? So, you know, in the situation kind of, you know, you need to put that to the side a little bit and say, well, what am I doing here? You know, if you're standing there thinking, I've got a nutless drive to shoot 59, or, well, you've still got 3 more shots to go if it's a par 4 or a par 5, or if you need a birdie or whatever it is. So, you know, one thing I did, which I do quite a lot, and, you know, I've spoken about this a little bit, would be, you know, I've read a few books and different things about meditation and that, and sometimes it's just good to notice what's going on around you, because it kind of gets you out of your own mind. And I think in them situations, I try to, you know, I go back to this point where, you know, I try and picture myself in this field where it's got a little house and there's like a swinging chair out the front and there's like flowing grass and the grass sort of flows and there's a picket fence around the outside that's painted white. And I can just imagine myself walking in there, and it's just really good for like my imagery, just to take myself away from thinking about my backswing or thinking about what could happen if this or...
So how often are you doing this?
I do it from time to time, whether it be when I'm feeling uncomfortable or whether I just need to feel like I need a breath or just something. So,
but say, for example, during that round, how many times would you...
I did it quite a lot that round. I did it, you know, I wouldn't have said I did it much on the front nine, but certainly coming around the turn, I would have done it more regularly. Up 17, I might have thought about it five or six times, you know, trying to take myself out of the situation and just get myself somewhere where I feel like I'm focused on my what I want to do. I can come back and switch into my, I can concentrate on what I need to be doing rather than walking along and thinking, wow, I've got this five iron coming in a minute, I need to carry the water. If I don't, it's going to be all over. If I hit it spot on, it's going to be even more excitement on the 18th tee. You know, I remember hitting a putt in, I'm from, you know, I hit a great shot into 17, and that putt's really fast sometimes. And the greens were a little inconsistent that year with pace. There was, you know, different colours, and some were, you know, it wasn't easy to get putts, especially the position I was in. I didn't want to ram it miles past, and obviously, you know, I wanted to give it a go, but down a hill on 17 and 12, both the par fives, I left my putts quite a bit short. You know, I remember the little putt, it felt like such a small swing. You know, the putt was shaking all over the place, but managed to knock her in. And walk into that 18th tee, which, you know, you're thinking about the water's on the left, the rough's on the right. If I hit in the rough on the right, I've got a real tough second shot. I'm probably, if I hit in the rough on the right, I'm going to miss the green to the right. Then I've got a chip. So, you know, the 18th hole in Portugal is all about the drive. You get the drive away,
sure,
you can make the hole so much easier. And just stood there on the back of the 17th green. And all I was thinking about walking to there was just the house and thinking about the wind flowing in the grass and trying to think, oh, there's some pine trees around and then there might be a red kite flying or something. And just something to take my mind away and just to breathe and just to kind of, suddenly I can feel my legs and I can feel my shoulders and feel my fingers and feel where I'm at. And
do you have to work at something like that? Because I can understand the concept of it.
Yeah.
But when you're on the 18th tee, you need a par for become first player in 46 years, 690,000 rounds, yeah, on the European Tour, first man to shoot 59. How do you actually put that into action? You know, the principle's great, but
yeah,
the actual doing must be pretty hard to do.
I actually think doing it is pretty easy because whether I'm at home in the garden, I can picture things all the time. You know, so I really like imagination. That's really important to me. Playing golf and feeling like what I want to do here and seeing and stuff. So being able to picture something is quite easy. Being obviously able to feel like you can feel your body is quite difficult because you've got to be able to control your body or feel like what am I doing here or do I feel ready to hit this? You know, your palms are sweaty, your knees are a bit like jelly. You know, everything feels like it's going a lot quicker. And you've got to slow that down because you don't want it to go really quick. You need to be able to say, I'm breathing here, I'm breathing, and this is fine. You know, we just watched Tiger on the weekend and he's chewing gum. Never seen him chew gum as much as that or like that before. He's obviously trying to stay a bit more relaxed maybe in his jaw or, you know, help with his saliva or stay hydrated. Maybe it was hot, so maybe that helped with that. But generally, if you're relaxed in your jaw, you tend to be a little bit more relaxed with things anyway. You know, as soon as you tense up, your jaw tenses.
Do you think we're going to see a lot more people chewing gum in the
next year?
No, but
when you watch things and then and you think about how people will relax, because it's not always about, can I do it? It's about when it gets a bit edgy and nervy, can I do it then still? And what do I do with that? And the thing for me is I need to do it more regularly on a more regular basis during normal tournaments. But the thing that I'm proud of is that I know that I can do it when I get under that, in that situation. You know, Tiger was really noticeably breathing. He really controlled his breathing a lot more. You could see his chest moving in and out and his stomach moving. And he looked like he was trying to not be calmer, but look like be more relaxed in terms. And I know he's always been really about that, the massive highs and then going to the next tee and feeling as calm as, you know, a butterfly or whatever you want to call it. You know, feeling like he could go and control his emotions. But it looked really noticeable at the Masters. And I felt like in Portugal, and I've done it lots of times in my career and what I do, and it's just about trying to get yourself in the present. And, you know, the breath is so important about that. You know, how you're breathing is the easiest thing. All of us can do it. You know, just thinking in and out or counting to 10, one on every in-breath, two on every out-breath, or however you want to go about it. And then, you know, sometimes your mind can run away with what outcomes can happen. You know, oh, if you do this, if I do that, if I go there, if I do this, if my caddy says that to me, we could be waiting a lot on this next tee. If I'm standing there waiting, what am I going to do for 5 minutes while I'm waiting? You know, all these things can happen. And, you know, just thinking about looking back to that 59 and, you know, the last tee shot, you know, I just stood there and hit a fade off the water, you know, stood, aim it down the left and hit a little fade, which I've been doing all the time. And, you know, it was a make or break shot. It was one of them. If it went in the water, I stood there and hit the shot in the water, but I stood there and tried to hit the shot, which I felt like I'd hit all day. You know, if I stood and aimed it down the right-hand side and said, well, look, I'm going to aim it down there and try and draw it a bit or hit it straight, I don't know what I would have done. Would I pulled it? Would I pushed it? Then it would have been a different thing, you know, but I managed to get my drive away. I got really unlucky with my wedge shot because I had a horrible yardage. You know, a slight right to left lie. I had like 130 yards and the wind was just coming into me a little bit. And I didn't really want to draw it too much because the water wasn't in play, but, you know, I think it might have been 118 or so over the hazard. And it was just a little bit too far for my 52. And that would have been a perfect thing, slight right to left, feeling like I can just aim a little bit right, hit a nice 52 into the pin, come up a couple of yards short, carry the water no problem, and have 10 or 15 foot uphill for 58. Instead, I'm like, the wind is coming into me a little bit, and I'm like, I've got to hit a little wedge. Suddenly, I'm like, I'm trying to hold the heel a little bit. I didn't want to draw it, trying to just sort of hold it in there, just a couple of yards of fade to sort of counteract the slope. And just pulled it a tad. You know, the water's left, but I didn't want to aim it miles right and feel like I'm bailing out. Just pulled it a bit, and I think the ball actually pitched like pin high or just past the pin high. And there's a little bit of a downslope, and it ran on to like 40 feet past or 35 foot past. And, you know, it left me a pretty tricky putt.
Now there's people around the green as well.
Yeah.
Like, players have come out. Are you noticing any of this?
So, walking down after the second shot, there's a bigger crowd on the right hand side. That's where all the crowd is. You know, I didn't actually notice that many people because the scoreboard's on the left, the hospitality's behind the green. And there's, you know, guys said they stopped on the range to come and watch me finish, you know, so sure, they were standing on the edge of the water on the other side. I didn't see any of them. I could see the tunnel where we exit the green. Some of my friends and a few players had come down there. I saw someone had a bottle of champagne out and I'm thinking, well, it's Friday? Like, why are you getting champagne out on a Friday?
It hadn't crossed your mind that it was because you...
No, I knew why everyone was there, and I was like, I felt like the pressure was on me. But all the time, I'm going back to that little square, the picket fence. I'm thinking, that's where I am. That's where I am. Like, I'm just putting, and I'm just a boy putting in there, and it's just me and the hole, and that's it. Like, that's what I just sort of took myself out of the situation a little bit, and just because. It's so easy to get a little bit edgy, and it's about awareness. And I just felt like I was very aware of myself, and I was very aware of what I needed to do and the processes that I needed to go through.
How hard is it though to not think about the magnitude of what is happening here? I've mentioned, you know, we're sitting there thinking, yeah, I know it happened on the PGA Tour a number of times, but for some reason it was a ceiling that couldn't be broken. It seemed on the European Tour. It's only a number, I know.
Yeah.
And people had come so close, so many 60s.
Yeah.
But none of that obviously filters through your mind, or does it, and you're trying to block that out?
I didn't actually think about, oh, I could be the first person. I didn't think that. I obviously had a chance to shoot 59, and I thought, wow, you know, I could shoot 59. Like, I, you know, standing on the back of the 16th green, speaking to the guy and saying to him, look, mate, let's just enjoy these next two holes. If we shoot 61 or 62, we've had a great day. Made the cut in going out in 9 or 10 on the par for round two or round three. It's been a great Friday. You know, so let's just give it a go, you know. And I did everything I could in terms of staying in the moment and staying focused on my game. Those moments when you're walking between the shots in that situation are really important, you know, whether I'm talking to my caddy or whether I'm in my own mind and I'm actually relaxed in my own mind. I'm always my mind busy. How is it? What is it telling me? And I felt like, you know, walking onto 18, having that putt, which I know is a little bit right to left. You know, it's a little bit uphill because I'm starting it a little bit out to the right and then downhill. It's not an easy putt to get for pace. You know, the pace felt difficult. You know, it was hard to judge, especially in the situation. You know, my hands were, I was nervous, but 2 years before I had a putt from 20 foot the other way and you know, the pin was not far from where I finished, but I was putting left to right up the hill and I made it for birdie to finish birdie to shoot 65. So, you know, I'd hit good putts on that green before.
And that was to keep your card, yep. So yeah.
So I'd hit good putts and I felt really nervous that time. You know, it's not like I never felt nervous before. I know what shaking and feeling edgy is. I know what it's like to feel uncomfortable in your body and feel like, oh, there's consequences on this shot, or if I don't make this, this happens, or if this happens, that I know what that feels like. But being able to stand there and do it and say, do you know what, I went through my process and I managed to have a really good routine. I remember Project Harrington always saying, you know, he holds that putt in at Carnoustie in 2007, I think it was, and he says, that little 2-3 foot putt he held when I think he pitches up or to win the Open. I think it was in the playoff.
First time he went in the water.
And he pitched his up and he's got like a 3-footer,
yeah,
I think, to make. And he said, in his own mind, he said, I've got this to win the Open. But then he said, I that was the best routine I've ever made. And you think, wow, like he's saying that's the best routine. So is he actually thinking about that's the thing? Or is he going, oh, do you know what? I'm just going to put the best routine I can on this. And it sort of takes away a lot of that. What happens if I miss it? What happens if I make it? Oh, I've got a hit on that little speck of grass. That's what I'm aiming at. No, I'm going to put the best routine I can on this. And I know I can do that. And then it kind of lets the outcome take. You're not so outcome focused. And then suddenly you do it.
And you do it. And the reaction from other people is, I'd say, it's almost like you've won a golf tournament.
Yeah.
But it's Friday and you shot 59. It's kind of like surreal. Yeah. You can't celebrate as such, can you? Because that would kind of be weird on a Friday afternoon. But there was something to celebrate.
Yeah, definitely. It was walking off. I remember coming off and being rushed into the Sky studio to talk about a round with Sarah, I think. And it was great because walking off up the exit under the tunnel, you know, everyone was congratulating me and saying, well done. And, you know, how amazing is that? And I remember Stevie Gallagher being in front of me saying, oh, mate, it wasn't that easy out there today either. Like, and you was 9 under for 11. Like, we was thinking, crikey, like, how well was Ollie going? But, looking back at it, you know, I'm just very proud to have felt like, you know, I had a chance and I took that chance. And, you know, I can look back at that with confidence and feel like I noticed what I did well in that situation, which is something that I can always look back on. Because
we spoke about which round you're going to choose, and obviously... Yeah. I was thinking it was going to be 15, but it's not that simple a choice, is it? When you played as many rounds as you had as well.
Exactly. And I think, you know, over a course of a career, there's always rounds that stand out, whether it be a round to keep my card or whether it be a round to win, or, you know, sometimes a round on a Friday. You know what I mean? Like, obviously, like shooting a 59 is a great round. You know, you break a streak of missed cuts. I remember in 2011, I went, I think, like 11 or 12 missed cuts in a row from the start of the season. Made the cut in Sweden, finished 40th, made the cut in Ireland, you know, and my confidence was growing, you know what I mean? So sometimes making a cut on a Friday, you know, I did it a few weeks back, I've not started the year that well this year. Had a long layoff in December and got married and honeymoon, and you know, didn't feel like I finished the year too well in South Africa, but you know, there's still lots of positives to take from things and just finding out where I'm at and get my feels back. Missed the cut in Abu Dhabi, Dubai and Saudi Arabia. Went to Oman, got blown away with the weather. And suddenly I'm staying there on Friday in Qatar and I'm like, I'm on the cut line and I'm going well. I'm 3 or 4 under par for the day. And it's all there to be done again. And then suddenly I played great on them last few holes and I can take a real lot of confidence from that. So, you know, all the time playing on tour, and this is my 13th season on tour, it's, you know, when you look at guys that have been about for 25, 30 years, it's not reinventing yourself, but it's certainly, you know, you've got to keep saying, I can do it. This is what I'm good at. I know what I can do. Keep evolving all the time. You know, you've got to keep on saying, what am I finding fun? What am I enjoying about this? Am I enjoying the pressure? Am I enjoying keep trying to improve? Am I enjoying the challenge? Am I enjoying working on different aspects of my game, working with different people? What is it that's making me want to get up each day and go and play golf? And you know, I think when you look at the career, my career or different rounds, you know, certainly, you know, the 59 is probably one that stands out most so far, just because, you know, like you said, there's been a lot of rounds before me and no one's done it, and to have stood there and do it and felt like, you know, there's, you know, people watching, and you know, and my dad was there, my wife was there, It was special. It was a really special round.
And the reaction from it as well. Obviously, at the time, you said, you know, Stephen Gallagher came up to you. The champagne, I think it was Matt Wallace, was there. Other players were around there. Yeah. Then there were people that were playing the Tour Championship in the US, the likes of, you know, Justin Rose and Rory McIlroy, Tommy Fleetwood, others sending video messages down as well. I mean, I don't know how much you were able to absorb of that at the time, but it was an incredible reaction.
Yeah, so we come off and I remember doing a bit with Sarah in the studio and then coming back into the players' lounge. And at Portugal, they always put on a lovely spread, so the food's great. And I come off and I wasn't that hungry. I felt a bit kind of, whoa, sort of what's just happened? And I sat next to Shane Lowry in the players' lounge, who's Shane's one of my good friends. And I flicked my phone on, and the phone just went absolutely crazy. So it was funny. We had a little giggle, sat there watching the telly, and they were showing a few highlights of my round on the telly. And it was just a great day. And I just feel very lucky that it's happened to me and I managed to do it. It's somewhere in Portugal that's so nice that all of us enjoy going to. It's a great event. And it's something I'd always look back at and, you know, with great memories.
Yeah, so, I mean, just to go back to the beginning, because, you know, you're, I think it's fair to say, a child prodigy. Mm. Great things, big things expected, and this certainly, shooting a 59 was a great thing. Your dad was, he worked in the East End fruit?
Yeah, so my dad worked for my granddad's family business. He's a fruit and veg wholesaler, and now my first year on tour, he caddied for me for the year.
So he worked at Spitalfields Market, is that right?
Fruit and veg market, yeah.
Yeah, which is in the East End of...
Yeah, in Leytonstone, yes.
East End of London. Yeah. So, you know, the background, not necessarily what you'd perceive as a golfing background, if you like. How did your dad get into the game?
Well, my dad plays off six. His dad, so my granddad was, he was a club captain down in Salisbury in Wiltshire at a course called High Post. He was, captain, president, played off five handicap. My dad played off six, my auntie, my dad's sister.
So golf's always been there.
She's a decent player, yeah. So, you know, my nan played. So my dad's side of the family, very golfing family. My mum's side, both my uncles play, both my mum's brothers. My granddad doesn't really play, but... So there's plenty of golf in my family, you know.
But then there'd be no professional...
No professionals, no, but pretty good players, you know. My dad's off six. My auntie would have been single figures, maybe had the odd game for the county and that. So there's been... golf's always been in the family, and I've always grown up at golf course. When my dad worked so early in the mornings, back at midday, 1 o'clock, and then coming back from school, waking him up at 3:30 when we got in. Dad, come on, let's go up the golf course. You know, we'd go up, hit balls, or play nine holes, or, even when I was in the pushchair, my dad would say, and my dad loved hitting balls because he was finished work early, he'd go out to practice ground and hit a few balls, he'd take me around, I'd be there in my little shorts with a plastic club hitting a few around. So, you know, I played football and rugby, and, you know, but golf was always sort of the number one for me and the one that I was a bit better at than the others. So, my family's been around it. I've always been around it and always loved it. Got on tour when I was 18 as an amateur, got my card, and
but you were breaking records as an absolute, the youngest ever to be in the Walker Cup. You won the Faldo Series event, what, 3 years in a row. When, because obviously by this time, sponsors and agents, even when you're what, 14, 15, must be knocking on the door, did it all just feel normal, or did it feel surreal? I mean, looking back now as well?
I think looking back, the thing about golf is that golf's never really, I used to go to school and no one had a clue because I was playing golf. Now, not many kids played golf at school. So it's not like football where, that kid plays for, he's in the Chelsea or in the Arsenal under 18 squad. You know, I was playing for the GB United men at 16. You know what I mean? No one knew.
Missing from school certain days. So they must have, where's Ollie today?
Yeah, my attendance record wasn't great at school. I still got a few grades, which was all right. But it was one of them. You know, you could always go back to school having played golf and no one knew what you was doing. So, you know, it was quite a grounding game from that point of view.
Yeah, but you lived it. I'm not, but you must have, you were in the local papers, weren't you? I mean, people were talking about you in the same breath as Sandy Lahr and Nick Faldo, the next big thing, you know. So people must have been, there must have been some awareness, or were you not aware of that awareness then?
No, I felt like my family's really important to me, and you know? I've always been that kind of person where, you know, we go around my mum and dad's and mum does dinner and we sit down and all together, my sisters and that, and, you know, it's, you know, I never really thought of it as being, you know, I'm this prodigy or I'm a whatever, you know. I used to go and do my thing, play, come home. Is it a good day or a bad day? Oh, we've had a good day. Great. That's it. Go to bed. Well done, Ollie. Well done this. Or do you know what? We need to work at this or work at that. Or, you know, what can be better? And just try to enjoy it. You know, go out for a game of going with mates on a Saturday and have a game, mix in with the boys. You know, just normal person, really.
But why do you think you were so good so young?
I think I was probably a little bit more professional than my... You know, on the course, I think the way I used to, the way I think about the game was probably a little beyond my years. You know, I could score my ball. I knew what to do. I know where to hit it. I felt like my course management was good. You know, I played a lot with Rory growing up. You know, and we used to go and play and compete against each other. You know, we played home internationals, match play things against each other. We played team stuff together. In, you know, the St Andrews Trophy was partners as Fulton's partners. You know, and we had very different games. You know, he'd be a, not necessarily a lot more aggressive, but you felt like he had a bit more flair than what I had. I didn't have as much flair as him, but I was able to, you know, just go out and get my way around. You know, play my way around the course, hit the ball pretty long. I didn't have many weaknesses, and that's how I played. You know, in an amateur game at that age group, when you're playing against guys a little older, you know, I was always a fairly big kid, so, you know, distance wasn't a problem. You know, the equipment was good. You know, Nike had always supported me, which was great. And, you know, just go out and enjoy yourself. That's what I did. I felt like every time I played, I was pretty fresh, looking forward to scoring and playing. Whether I was playing good or bad, I was looking forward to playing around, like scoring my ball. You know, it always felt like I had an advantage in, you know, stroke play and match play over guys, because I could get my way around. I wouldn't make a silly mistake. You turn to pro golf, well, not many people make silly mistakes in pro golf. So, you know, I felt as an amateur, it was, you know, I obviously done pretty well, but it was, you know, it was a lot of fun, amateur golf.
Yeah, I mean, pretty well is an understatement. I mean, you know, the things you did were, you know, pretty special. At what point, was it the point of going pro where the pressure changed? Or...
No, I think, you know, since I've been a pro, and I'll be the first to admit, I could say, oh, am I disappointed or am I happy with where I'm at? I could say, well, do I wish I'd achieved more so far? I always think it's a difficult question because the standard's very good. You know, the courses are changing every week, so it's not like you're playing links golf throughout the whole summer. You know, you've got a different exam paper every week, and the conditions change. You know, and you've got to adapt to that. You know, generally courses are set up a little bit tougher than they are in the amateur game, in terms of pin positions, etc. But I feel like, you know, I feel like I've learned a hell of a lot in the years that I've been a pro in life, just in the way that I am about myself. From a results point of view, you know, obviously I've won, I've shot a good round, I've had,
you
know,
listen, you don't
countless,
need to justify
no,
your
I've had, no,
you've
but
had 13 I've, years on the European
yeah,
tour.
Yeah, I've had countless other, like, yeah, second places. I've lost in a couple of playoffs and that. So I've had times when it could have gone either way. And I feel like, you know, the only thing that's different now to maybe was when I was a kid is maybe a little bit of consistency. But I think it's, you know, I'm 30, been on tour 12 years or 13 years. This is my 13th season. And I still feel pretty fresh. I feel like...
You still feel one of the young guys?
No, I don't feel one of the young guys. I feel like I feel pretty fresh in my mind. I don't feel like I'm kind of exasperated on what I'm going to be going and doing. I don't feel like I'm on the treadmill or like the conveyor belt production line. Like I'm on it every week. You know, I feel like I'm getting to the point where I'm managing my sort of mental capacity a bit better. I'm not so focused on, oh, is this correct or is that correct? I feel like I'm kind of playing a lot more week on week, and I know where I'm at a lot more. I know my job.
Because there's so many things I want to ask you on this. Like, for example, Rory McIlroy, I saw a quote from him talking about you. He played a practice round with you in Dubai a few years ago. And you beat him. Mm. One up. He said, you look at Ollie's game, he has all the shots. If he just had a little more belief and stopped being so hard on himself and getting his own way, who knows what he might achieve. Is that fair, what were he saying there?
Yeah.
I know it's a few years ago he said it. But
yeah, I think, something I've been working on a little bit lately is like self-compassion. And I think, sometimes it's easy when things don't go quite right to sort of overreact a little bit. And, you can go out on a Thursday in the afternoon and someone's already shot 9 under par or 8 under par and you bogey the first hole and it's like, cool, I need to get something out of the bag. I need to shoot 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 under par for the next lot to sort of keep me weighing. And, the longer you're out there, you realise it's a 72-hole event. You've just got to plod your way along. You'll get your run of 9 holes where you might go 4 or 5 under par for that 9 and just keep chipping away. And it's like a test match. You've just got to keep chipping away. And I think, the longer I'm, the longer I've been out there and playing tour golf, I think, you don't necessarily need to be the best at everything. You just need to be decent enough at stuff and not make the mistakes. It goes back to, I was talking to someone earlier on about Ian Poulter and, how well, he's done over the last 18 months or so and about his game. And you think, well, Poulter's obviously got a load of self-belief and, he walks like he's a champion and you sort of feel like he believes that. But, we've all got our insecurities and things that we go on and you obviously have to work at that. But, in his game, what's making him compete in majors and compete week in, week out on the European Tour, obviously playing and winning last year on the US Tour. And it's just doing what he does. And
but when you're this young guy and you go on tour and you did well to start with as well, kept your car first year. Then Rory, you said, you played Junior Ryder Cup with him, you were his partner, and obviously you're good friends with him, you want him to do well. But when you see him come onto the tour and go, whoosh, is there a bit of you that thinks, why is that not happening to me? Or you must look at someone.
Yeah,
like,
of course. Well, I look at,
you're as good as him in terms of.
Well, yeah, I think it's hard to say. You can say you're as good as him. I think Rory's does a lot of things a lot better than me at times, and there'll be things that we all go and play golf and play our way, and everyone's game's different in your own person. But
there's not an exact science to it. I agree.
It isn't.
Yeah.
And when you look at Rory, Rory had his struggles when he came out. Obviously, got his card really quickly, but in 2008 he didn't play that well early on. He didn't get going until he finished second at Omega European Masters, and then that propelled him up from like 120 in the list or wherever it was up into the top 40. So, there's certain points in your career where you think back and go, that was a turning point. That made that happen. This made that happen. That result changed something in the way that I felt. And I've always sort of maybe had one step forward, a couple of steps back, and never really... I've sort of trod water a little while, But
Can I give you a quote from when you were a kid?
Yeah.
It just said, there's no point being out there just to make up the numbers, is there? Every time I play in a tournament, I want to be challenged for titles. You want to dream about winning the Open or the Ryder Cup. So when it happens, you've already been there in your own mind, which is kind of about your daydreaming and how what you mentioned before. You were working with a sports psychologist then at the time.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you've still obviously got all these dreams.
And yeah, exactly.
You still envision these moments?
Yeah, and, if you said to me, if we was chatting here and I'd have just got my tour card at 28 and been on tour last year and finished 70th in the list and this is my second year on tour, everything's fresh. I'm 30 years old. I've been on tour ever long. And, all right, whatever's just not gone quite as well. But I've had my tour card all that time. All right, I've lost it, but still played 4 seasons the year after. I've got a hell of a lot of experience and
a lot of talent.
Yeah,
and like you've got a win and you've shot a 59.
It's a funny one. You can look at it.
Do you get that a lot though? Does it annoy you?
I think I need to look back at myself and think, I've tried so hard. I've put a lot of effort in and this is where I'm at. And I can't, if you look back at it, everything with regret and thinking, oh, I wish this, I wish that. You're never going to be happy.
You must have had some low points. I mean, we talked 100%. About 2011 when you missed all those cuts in a row. I think Castle Stewart was the last of those and the weather was terrible.
Definitely.
It must have been timed. You're thinking, what am I doing here?
Oh, without a doubt. That's sport. Like, that is professional sport. Like, I know you can say, oh, yeah, but Tiger Woods or Rory McIlroy have got whatever in the bank or this, like, you don't grow up playing golf to be a millionaire. You grow up playing golf because you love playing golf. And I think a lot of the time when sportsmen are quizzed about what they're doing, it is sometimes too much like a business. Like, at times, there's times when you need to think of it like a business and think about, how am I going to improve? What part of this am I doing? But then sometimes you've got to go, do you know what? This is a game, and this is what I'm doing because I love it. And, you know, definitely, I think there's times, like, you know, you need to go into the mental side and think, what am I doing here? How's my body feeling? There's times you need to go and have a bit of fun with some friends and have a game and take that bit where it's a profession and so serious every day, and try and just mix it up a bit. And I think, you know, looking back at my career, it's so easy for people to go, oh yeah, Rory McIlroy, you was playing with him, you was compared to him all the time, and you was together, you've come out on tour pretty much the same time, and look at him and look at you, and go, yeah, but look at a few other lads that we played with as well at the same time. Where are they now? They're not even on tour. Look at some of the guys I played with in the World Cup team. They're not on tour. But I'm still on tour, and I'm still playing. I'm still in the Premier League, if you like, in Europe for European golf. So, you know, there's a lot of positives as well. And I think, listen, I've not achieved anywhere near like what I want to do. But in my life, I'm happy, and I feel like I've achieved, you know, like my, you know, I just got married. My wife's great, you know, our family is, everything's great. So, you know, I love what I do, and, you know, sometimes I hate it, don't get me wrong, and hate, you know, being out there and grinding away, but that's what it is, and that's life. And sometimes...
Does it help in a way that you, like, for example, the win that you had?
Yeah.
I just mentioned Castle Stewart, you missed the cut. I've got it written down, hold on here. 16th missed cut in a row, that was.
Mm.
16th. And then you mentioned it earlier when we were chatting about you had a couple of good results.
Okay, yeah.
You were 224th on the race to Dubai, and you win the Czech Masters.
Yeah.
I mean, that just shows you a win can come. I mean, there was, as you say, some shoots of prosperity there from the couple of events before, but it's gone from a pretty low point to a pretty big high in a matter of weeks, hasn't it? And that's what can happen in golf.
Yeah, and I think... No, the best thing about that is having showed no form, really, to get under the pressure and do it. And there's two things in that. There's a flip question, because from a sportsman's point of view, it's also quite alarming and a bit annoying that, do you know what, why can't I do this under pressure, but I'm not doing it all the time? But then again, it's also great that you go, do you know what? You know, I can look back and, you know, I always remember, and so my mates go, Carl, what's the best shot or best time you've ever had in your golf career? And I never forget, I grew up at a course called West Essex Golf Club. And in Essex, you have a like inter-club tournament called the Thornton Cup. And it's like a 10-man team. You play 5 foursomes in the morning and 10 singles in the afternoon. And I'm 14 years old off a +2 or +1 or +2. And they announce a playoff man in the morning. So you write down who's your playoff man if it's a draw. And we go out. I think I lost my singles match in the afternoon to their number one player, and whatever, I lost 2-1 or 3-2 or something. And then the match was 7-half after all was gone. And I was actually flying away on the next day for to play for like England under 16s in the European Young Masters, which I think a fella called Ben Parker won. Rory came second. He shot like 66 on the last day to finish second. But so to this tournament, we're drawing it 7-half, 7-half, and I'm the playoff man. Well, the playoff guy I'm playing against wasn't the guy I played. It was the EGU psychologist, Jonathan Bint, who come to work on our regional stuff as, like, you know, you have the head pro or the pro that leads the day. You might have a physio. And then the mental guy that was there, and that was Jonathan Bint. And I'm playing against him in the playoff.
Right.
And these days, you obviously got 10 guys from each team. Then there's quite a few members around, and we're playing at Chiggle Golf Club. And it's like a 480-yard par 4 and a, you know, quite a tough hole. And I nutted a drive, hit a great second shot into 12-foot. He held a 40-foot for birdie. I knocked it in after him, and then I hit a 6-iron into 3-foot on the next hole, par 3. And I look back at that as in my career as one of them moments where actually I was in front of my peers and my friends and people that everyone there meant a lot to me, And I was so nervous. You know, I'd had times in before that where I'd gone out and shot a good round in whatever tournament, the Wheaton Picks at the Forest of Arden as a 12 or 13 year old, and then come back in the last four holes and finish bogey, 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 and lost in the playoffs to Matt Swales. Matt Swales is caddy on the tour now. You know, so I've had, you know, in these situations as a sportsman, you know, you never forget what you've done and where you've been and what's gone on. And, you know, like you said, 16 missed cuts to come on and win. And I've always felt like in the situations when they feel a bit edgy or feel a bit nervous, I can think quite clearly. You know, it's sometimes how can I think clearer or get in that mindset when maybe, you know, maybe my mind's not switching on enough or whatever's going on. And, you know, we play a lot of tournaments and travel a lot and there's a lot going on week to week. And maybe it is a little bit of fuzz sometimes that just needs to click you into focus. You know,
sure. But listen, as you say, there's a lot of years ahead of you. But the one thing is, whatever happens from now, you will always be European Tour's Mr. 59, won't you?
Yeah, no, exactly. So it's unbelievable day and something I'm very proud of.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that. What a down-to-earth guy Ollie Fisher is. It's interesting, isn't it, that debate, what is success? You know, do you have to have won four majors or four European Tour events? What is it that's deemed success? And interesting chatting to Ollie there about, you know, the expectations that came with being so good so young and what he's achieved so far. But one thing's for sure, as we said at the end of that interview, he is going to go down in the history books for certain. Love your views on that, please get in touch with us. You know the way to do it, but I'll remind you just in case. Twitter at The Round Podcast, on Facebook at The Round Golf Podcast. Please, I know I ask now and again, love you to give us a rating, please, a comment. It just makes the podcast more visible to people who haven't listened before. And if you want to recommend it to someone, even better. Now, just to let you know, going to hit the pause button for a few weeks. Hope you don't mind. Still got some great interviews to bring you. Some of them actually have been recorded already, but as you understand, it's a pretty busy time of the year. But don't worry, we will be back with the Round Golf Podcast.
Thank you for listening to The Round with Richard Kaufman. You can follow us and get in touch via Twitter at The Round Podcast, on Instagram, Podcast The Round, and on Facebook at The Round Richard Kaufman. And we'd appreciate you taking the time to rate and review us on iTunes. The Round Podcast with Richard Kaufman, in association with IMG Audio.